Hey, beautiful friends, and welcome to Faith-Fueled Woman. This is your host, Kristen, and whether you've just joined us for the first time or you're listening weekly with me, I'm so glad you're here and you've joined us for today's conversation. Hi, today on the show, I would like to welcome my guest, Katie Rossler. She's a burnout and hidden grief specialist, and I'm so excited to have her join me today because she has both walked through changing her life, stepping through burnout and stress and loss, into finding joy by understanding and uncovering what was really behind all of those things, and also understanding grief in a much broader and bigger sense and how to deal with it. And so I want to welcome her today. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you so much, Kristen. I'm excited about the conversation we're going to dive into because I know it can be really supportive to your listeners today.
Before we dive into today's episode, I just want to tell you a little bit about Katie's background. With 15 years as a therapist, she is shifting the way we think about and experience challenges in our lives and teaching us to transform our pain into our greatest empowerment. Katie has had two private practices, one in the US and one in Germany, worked in community centers, schools, homes, and facilities supporting people to live happier, healthier lives. Now Katie has moved her work to bigger platforms and has authored two books, leads trainings for corporations, consults with entrepreneurs growing their business, has a podcast called The Balance Code, and she speaks on stages internationally. As a mom of three and a business owner, she understands the need for resources to not just survive life, but to thrive. All right, here we go. Jumping right in. You know, you definitely talk about this, you know, in your on your platform quite a bit, but a lot of people think grief is just tied to loss, you know, like loss of a loved one or loss of, you know, like miscarriage, all the things that, you know, you have walked through. But as you're going to walk us through, grief is so much more than that. We can grieve lots of things going on in our lives. And so I really am excited to share this episode with my listeners when it releases. So yeah, thank you so much for coming and joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me just first ask you, can you just tell us like what did your background look like? And then how did you get into what you're doing now? What does life look like for you?
Yeah, so my background as far as just me versus professionally, I grew up in the States. I live in Germany now, so that's why I have to point out I grew up in the States. Military kid, constantly moving every 2 to 3 years. I always joke that the longest I had lived in one place was the 4 years of college. And then later in life, I was able to settle finally and plant some roots. But we were always packing, always in boxes, always setting up a new home, being the new kid in school. And then I decided to go into what I thought at the time I wanted to do was physics pre-med. So I thought I want to be a doctor. It's all about that. My mom was all on board too, of course, you know how that is. And then the first semester I was like, these are not my people. I'm way too social for these people. I want to chit chat. And they like look at me like I'm like, oh, it's so uncomfortable. You're in my office. And it's like, nope, this doesn't work. And I had taken a psychology class and it was just perfect. It was exactly all the experiences I had and all those moves. I naturally studied people. I naturally learned about people very quickly so that I could adapt, right? So that I could interact with them. And then through that, I called my mom and said, I'm changing my major. I'm going to go into psychology and I'm going to be a therapist. I know it. This is what I'm supposed to do. And she was like, okay. Yeah. She was so happy later that that's what I transitioned to. And she knew exactly that that's what I was meant to do. But it was the initial shock of, I thought I was going to have a doctor as a daughter and now I'm going to have a therapist as a daughter. I mean, you know, cool, but like different. I did my undergrad in psychology with a certificate in women's study. And then I transitioned to marriage and family therapy for my master's. And I did a 3-year residency where I worked with children and I worked with teens in a locked facility and I ran groups and all of these things so I could kind of like get my feet wet in different areas. And when I got licensed, I was like, I know I want my own practice. And I was one of the few in my area who had just gotten licensed and was definitely as young as I was and had a private practice. Everybody else was much older. They'd been doing it for a long time. It was normal for you to go and join a therapist's office, like a group, instead of go do it by yourself. But I was like, nope, I don't want to do that. I want to go out on my own. And I did. And I had a really successful practice where I lived in Norfolk, Virginia, down the road from you now, on Colley Avenue. And I loved it. And then I met my husband, who's German. And we fell in love. And it was very clear from the beginning that, you know, the ultimate plan was to move to Germany. And Munich is where his family is. So we said, okay, we'll move to Munich. We did that in between. My firstborn was 2 years old and I was pregnant with our second. And we did the big international move, which again, back in boxes, you know, putting everything, selling stuff, getting new things, whatever we need for the new house. The transition here in the beginning was exciting and fun. I'd already started to grieve the fact that I didn't think I'd be able to work here the way that I did before. And then a lot of it has changed and we'll get into that. But I thought, you know, I'm not going to be able to be a therapist. I'm not going to be able to support people. Like, okay, I got to let that go. And, you know, remember I had that phone call with my mom, like, this is the dream. This is it. This is what I want to do. So it's like something was dying inside of me, it felt like, and that was a lot of the grief for it. So we move here and, you know, absolute divine timing. We are at a playground with a marriage and family therapist who has his doctorate, is German. He's speaking English to his grandchild. And we're like, hey, other English speakers, you know what? With a little kid with them too. And my husband goes and starts talking to him. And he's like, Katie, come over here. You have to hear this. And I was like, what? He's like, he's a marriage and family therapist. And I'm almost in tears, pregnant, going like, what? Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I'm doing research right now on relationships. And not anytime soon, because you're about to have a baby. But later on, contact me. I'd love for you to support me. I'm translating it, not being a translator, but translating it fully as an English-speaking therapist into the vocabulary that will make sense to somebody who's doing the surveys and reading the emails and things. So after our second was born, I was about to start like selling products and things. And that my husband reminded me, don't you remember that divine moment where God said, hey, hold on, there's somebody who's going to show you a way. And he did. And he was a godsend because it showed and opened the doors of how I can work here. In different vocabulary, but still my skill set of serving people. And in that time here, I had a lot of losses. My mom died in end of 2018 unexpectedly. And then we had a series of miscarriages trying for our third. And then we got pregnant with our third during COVID. So it was a lot of tumultuous time. And I like to describe it like standing up and then the ocean knocking you down again. You stand back up and that wave comes again. And you eventually just feel like, what's the point of getting up? And in that process, I wrote my first book because it was kind of my own therapy of just writing out what's really going on. Because grief was hitting me so hard, but I realized I had felt this grief before. I felt grief every time we moved. And grief isn't just sadness, right? Like we always equate grief as sadness and crying. But grief is also just letting go of the way we thought life would or should go. And every move I had that during my parents' divorce in my teen years, I had that. Going off into grad school, far away from where my family was, all by myself, I had that disconnect and that detachment. And it was really hard. And I know for my mom, empty nest, that was a time of grief and you know, rediscovering life on her own without her kids in the house. So the more that I was writing all of this and how I was feeling in this fifth pregnancy, but third pregnancy overall, it was just like, wow, there's a lot of stuff coming out of here that I don't think is just made for me. I often will read pages in my book and I'm like, I wrote this? Like, whoa. Because it's just this sort of divine channeling of what needs to be said so that people start to heal. You know, one of the most natural and normal parts of life is change. And because of that, there will always be grief because there's always a letting go of what we thought life would or should look like. And so here in Germany, I support my clients through all of grief, whatever it is. If it's a death that is from 5 years ago that they never faced, if it's, wow, I live here and this isn't, I'm not happy here anymore. If it's couples who are struggling, because this isn't the marriage I thought I was signing up for. And through that, I've realized the epidemic of burnout is because people aren't resolving the hidden grief in their lives. And they're continuing to overwork and not put down boundaries and struggle with time management because of so much that they're not willing to face yet. So I've started to really speak out against that too, because the more we're awake to, oh, this is what's happening, the more we can start to shift for ourselves. And so long story, that's my background. That's how I got into serving clients the way that I do. And now I get to do it internationally, you know, from my computer screen or in my office here in Munich as well, being able to see people locally. I've met people from cultures all around the world. It's taught me so much. It's been amazing, and it brings me joy every day that I get to do this. And it inspires me to grow as a person constantly and deal with my grief, because it's, you know, they like to use the layers of an onion thing for therapy, right? You pull one layer off, there's another layer. Yeah, for all of us. So the more I work with people, the more I see my own layers, and it's just a beautiful process.
First of all, I love that this is the work you're doing in the world, because it's so needed. And like you said, it's so needed for us to have voices out there like yours and the books that you've written, you know, in your podcast, that lets us know that, hey, hold on, grief isn't just about when you have a physical loss of a person. Grief is through all the things, like you said, you know, where there's just change, there's turmoil, there's upheaval, there's something, you know, like you said, just a transition. It can, all of those, a change in identity, right? All of these things can bring about these feelings. And there's lots of feelings that are tied into this, you know, this letting go, if you will, or this transitioning. And so I love that you're doing that. But could you just share with us first, how might somebody identify if maybe they have unresolved grief? What does that look like? How does that bubble up in our lives that you're seeing, especially with women?
Yeah. So for women, obviously the first is burnout, people pleasing. I also find like that type A perfectionist, you know, we have our personality traits, but when they are magnified to a level that impacts our lives, where we have high levels of anxiety or depression, or just, you know, unable to sit still and be present in the moment. I often say, if you clear space on your calendar and you immediately start to fill it with a to-do list, or trying to find somebody to have coffee with, or, and you can't just sit with yourself, that's a clear sign that there's something there that's unresolved. And most of my clients come to me and say, I've just tried to stay busy for so long and it's just not working anymore. Like, now I'm just making it worse, and I'm getting older, and I can't anymore.
Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people that I think would raise their hands for what you just said, you know, the busyness. And we definitely live in a culture that, unfortunately, we also, especially in the States, right, it may be a little bit less over there, but that this hustle culture, but also this culture of hurry, in this, you know, the culture of busyness. It's like we glamorize being busy and saying, oh, I'm so, have so much to do, instead of saying like, huh, maybe we need to reassess and see, why can't we set boundaries to make that not so in some cases. So, you know, I think that's one of the things that adds to this. You know, we might need to work on something, but our culture also is feeding into this idea, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And it is very much a Western culture thing. The more I meet people, there are particular countries here in Europe where I'm like, oh, you guys are the take a nap midday, relax,
right?
No stress. Germany is not that. And I say that in the most loving way. Again, I'm now, you know, German kids, German family, but they don't like to stand in line and wait. They're very impatient, just in generalizations, right? So because of that, I'm in a culture where that's going on. And if you've got somebody coming from a culture that isn't like that, they feel the pressure to become that. And on top of that, we just had the experience of COVID, where here was ultimate, absolute lockdown, companies closing, nobody in the office kind of thing. You're stuck in your house. The police are driving the streets, making sure no one's out. It was very serious. Well, that's a lot of time to work. It's a lot of time to sit with your feelings too, but it's a lot of time to work,
right?
Because there's no closure. There's no driving to work, driving away from work, you know, getting on the S-Bahn or whatever. There's nothing that separates you from when do I clock out and when do I clock in. And so people started working a lot, no matter what cultural background they had. And that continues, because companies were like, wow, we're making it through this, because you can be on 10 meetings in a day, right? Like, you don't need to travel. There's nothing. So things like that have, I think, compounded. And those of us who struggle with our worth is set up into what we do versus we just are worthy as is. Then we're in that hustle culture everywhere, right? You know, I mean, when we talk about, when we look at just like suicide rates when it comes to workers, you know, there's certain countries that it's super high because it's performance oriented. And it's very sad, but you see it's so ingrained. So when we talk about how do we start to shift this and how do we help people with this burnout thing, you have to first recognize it's your culture, it's your society, it's your neighborhood, it's your community, it's your family, it's the work environment. Like there's so many things you're about to unlearn. And you got to do it. But first realize, like, you know, it's like me going like, I want to pull up that tree and not really realizing the roots run under my house. Like maybe I want to figure out where this tree, like where the roots really go before I start to pull it up. So then I understand the consequences of it. That's not to mean I'm not going to pull up the tree, but it's to know like what will the impact be. So as we start to notice in ourselves, I have that drive and that excitement and that passion, but then it turns into unhealthy. I'm working long hours throughout the night. I'm disconnecting from family. I'm on my phone scrolling because I don't want to be present with anyone. That's when it's like, okay, what do you not want to face? And is it that scary? Or is it scarier to live a life that 10, 15, 20 years down the road, you're like, man, I was not present for any of that. That's a tough reality.
Totally. Well, you know, and one of the things that I think you've talked about, you know, and, I mean, in your content is that one of the very similar things, that's the top regret of the dying, right? That was in the top five regrets of the dying from Bronnie Ware. But it's that you didn't, the regret is that you didn't live the life that you wanted to live. You lived a life that other people wanted you to live. And I think you got to a point where you kind of one day or over time realized, I think I need to make some changes, right? Like you were going after what the definition of success was for what you understood it to be. And then you realized, I think, that you wanted something else. So I'd love for you to talk about that. Because I think a lot of us, especially once we get into 30s, 40s, 50s, beyond, at some point, we kind of start questioning some things like, gosh, you know what? Maybe I'm really not very content. I don't love my job. I want to wake up and actually enjoy it more. Or, you know, I did this because I was a lawyer because my parents wanted me to be, or my mom and dad are lawyers, or right? There's all these expectations around us. And so what would you just share with us about that? Because I think a lot of us have had that feeling, even if we've never voiced it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if you don't go through it in your 30s and then again in your 40s and then again in your 50s, there's something off. Like, I think it's cycles. And I think we need that actually. Right. We need that reevaluation and maybe shifts because you're changing. So what you liked in your 30s or you thought you liked it changes. So for me, you know, a big shift in the way that I worked and what I was working on, you know, I was all about like, okay, I'm going to see clients and I'm going to make courses online and I'm going to make workbooks and do all these things. And this is before the idea of the book even came out. I always knew there would be a book, but I didn't know when. My goal was to be able to get my mom out of debt because she, when my parents divorced, she was going through law school so she could have a job to support us. And her dream was always to be a lawyer. So in her late 30s, early 40s, she was in her shift of, okay, I'm going to become a lawyer. So she did. We graduated. I graduated high school a week after she graduated law school. But she had all that debt. And so the life that I remember at my mom's was always in debt, right? Always in debt to the bank. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to make money to pay off her debt. And then she died. And I was, as much as there was all the grief of the loss of her, there was also the loss of the drive of like, well, what am I doing this for now? Like this was my goal was to support her. And now I've inherited things from her that I'm like, no, this was supposed to be hers. So it took me a couple of years to regain, like, what is this going to be? And, you know, especially in the online world, there's a lot of like, retire your husband and buy your family a home. And you're like, oh my gosh. Like, first of all, huge dreams that not everybody needs to have. And does your husband want to be retired? Maybe not. Mine would go insane. So like, that's what I'm just like, sometimes you get these dreams coming at you. Like, this looks so beautiful, doesn't it? As a woman empowered doing these things. And I was like, it does, but am I then just throwing the goal off on something else? So once I started to get into the grief work world, and plus I got pregnant a third time. So it was like, oh, what are we, I got to take a pause anyways. I had the time to really think, why, what's my why? What do I actually want to do? What actually matters to me? For a while, I stopped seeing couples. Some of it was the burnout of seeing so many couples during COVID who were in crisis. And as I was pregnant, that's really difficult. Yeah. And some of it was because, you know, there's a lot of healing after my mom died between my dad and I and the causes of the divorce. And so then I was like, I'm not as interested in working with couples. And you'll hear this from a lot of counselors and therapists. Like when you go like, well, what's your specialty? And then you kind of go, well, what happened in your family life that led to maybe yes. you want to do these things or and life experience. So this is part of our nature. But as soon as things started to heal, I was less motivated. Now I've started seeing couples again and I love it because it really is one of my wheelhouses that I feel very gifted in. And it has a whole different space now. It isn't about saving anything on the outside. It's really working with the couple to find what's best for them. So I've had to pivot and shift, and I didn't want to be a grief specialist. Let's just put it out there. Like who's like, yeah, I really want to be a grief or burnout specialist. But it kind of came to me and it was like, sorry, I realize you don't want to, but it's kind of like, we've been preparing your whole life for this. Get up on the stage. It's time. You're like, yes, mom. Okay. So that's it. It found me. And as soon as I started speaking out about my own grief experiences, I noticed how uncomfortable it made people. And I noticed how it freed some people. And I was like, those are the people who need to hear this. Okay. So I started to really recognize that my purpose work, that is the, you know, that brings me joy and actually helps me to earn an income as well. Like I'm lucky that it ends up being both and not just volunteer work, is something that isn't for everyone. Not everybody's ready to hear these messages, but they'll always be there when the time is right. Right. And the ones who need to hear it are the ones who are going to perk up their ears and listen and go, yeah, that is a soothing balm to my soul that I needed in this fire that I feel like I'm standing. I could not have gotten there had I not walked at first and not, you know, been rock bottom multiple times. Yeah. So I'm in transition right now. I'm 39, in July I'll be 40. And I actually am in this space of my own grief work and just the transition and growing older and my kids getting bigger. It's like I call it the and emotions. Like I'm so emotional and grieving I'm growing up and all these things and they're growing up and what is this? And I'm so actually excited about it because it's like, what is going to be next? Like what's the next iteration? And so I think if we can hold space for all of that, like good Lord, in 10 years from 30 to almost 40, the amount of things that have happened in my life, like I do pray that maybe it'll be less from 40 to 50,
right?
But the way my life is probably not, that's okay. Like that's the piece where I remember resilience. And we all have it. We just have to remember that we have it and recall how much we've gone through in life that has built it so that it can come back up. And that's the piece where I think I get excited about what's next because I know that I'm resilient enough to handle it. So if you're in that stage of like, I'm questioning or I feel imposter syndrome or anything like that, normal, awesome, like good. Because that's where the cocoon phase, right? That's where the metamorphosis happens and it's uncomfortable and it's gross and it's yuck. And then we become this beautiful butterfly. But you can't be the butterfly without the metamorphosis process. And I think that's essential for us to remember, like embrace it all. And I don't say that from, I've been accused online of like toxic positivity. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I've walked it. There's no me trying to sugarcoat. You either get on board with the roller coaster and be like, throw the hands up and I'm going to scream and cry at the same time, but be like, wow, this is amazing. Look at that view. And I just flipped upside down. Or you just feel this immense dread and unhappiness. And I would prefer to cry and be excited at the same time. That's just my preference.
And I think it's the whole concept of there's always hope to be found. There's always kindness to be found. And there's always some good, even in the hard stuff. Right. In other words, it could be the person. It could be that you reconnected in it or a deeper way with your dad. I mean, somebody in your life meeting that man. Like there's so many things that are happening at parallel, even when we're grieving something or we're going through this transition or turbulence in our lives. But we have to be aware. We have to have that spirit of gratitude and our perception has to be aligned with it. Right. So that we can still grieve. We can still not know what's coming or be uncertain about something, but we can also then enjoy moments and enjoy the things about it, you know, as we walk through these things. Absolutely. And that's definitely a mindset and a perspective. You know, some people have learned or have come to that point, and some people, that's really hard for them still, right? That's not where they tend to be, both personality wise and to just kind of where they're at, I think.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Again, it goes back to that conditioning. Where are your roots? There's the family nature. We don't talk about these things. We don't, you know, I don't want to hear it. Don't ask for help, right? Don't air out your dirty laundry. We all know the phrases. And you're like, and then you don't feel like you have a voice. So it can be very easy for it to go, no, this is actually uncomfortable and I don't want to face it. And it's like, absolutely, you can. That's totally fine. But you also get a choice. You also get a choice of being, you know, unhappy and scared and feel like your voice is constantly constricted, or to unlearn and heal and start to see life differently. And I think your journey, Kristen, as well, has been going, nope, I'm getting on the roller coaster. Let's just see this so that we find our joy again. Because I know what it feels like not to have that joy. I know what it is like to be on the antidepressants and the anti-anxiety meds and being like, okay, this is my life from here on out. It's genetic. This is how I am. This is my brain. And shifting so much of myself to go, wow, I was making that my identity and my story. And not everybody needs to get off meds. I'm not saying like, but my journey was, I didn't actually need those things because of the work I did mentally, emotionally, learning tools and during neurofeedback and EMDR and all these different types of therapy that were like, wow, life-changing. Yeah.
So good. So what would you just say? I mean, what are some tips or things that we can do in our own lives as we do ride this roller coaster and we have these feelings that are coming up? And like you said, whether maybe we've never dealt with some of the things that are under the surface, or maybe we've dealt with some of them, but there's still stuff there. So what do you just recommend to people that they do on their own or other tools that they should consider?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things is honoring the fact that, of course, you will need solitude in this process. You'll want to pull away. You won't want other people to know your stuff, but you also just need time to think, right? And like to feel it. I often say to my husband, like, I don't have the words yet. He'll be like, what's wrong? I'm like, I just don't have the words yet. And he knows that's like, I'm going off to my island. Let me be. And I'll come back once I figured it out. The problem is that when we go off onto our island of solitude, we stay there too long and it starts to feel like isolation. And we get a little upset why people aren't checking in on us. When in our solitude moment, right, I said to my husband, I don't have the words for this. I just need some space and time. And if I stay away long enough, emotionally, mentally, whatever, in communication, he's just going to keep respecting that, hopefully, and not push. And then there'll be a point where I'm like, you don't love me. You don't care. And he's like, oh my God, I was respecting your wishes. So we have to be very careful with knowing when it's time that we're cocooning. We're going off to our island. We're trying to understand and figure out. We're reading the books. We're listening to the podcasts. We're doing the journaling. You know, we're looking at the gratitude practices. And now it's time for me to go back and start to find my tribe. And the tribe is going to be women who've gone before you, but are ahead of where you are and have gotten there in healthy ways, right? Not the ones who are still caught up in it. And yes, often we like to have like that soul sister who's in it with us. But sometimes they can bring us down and vice versa. I am very aware when I am at my stressed, like the most stressed moments, and my friend is at her most stressed moments, we can be nasty to each other. And I'm like, we're not good for each other right now. Just literally give each other a weekend, get good sleep, rest, you know, and like, good morning, sunshine, everything's fine, right? But we've learned that about ourselves, that in our worst, we're not there. We can't. And it's okay. That doesn't hurt us when we need to go, I need time. So find your tribe of women who've been there ahead of you, kind of like your own mastermind of women, mastermind for life, right? Of women who've been there, who can go, it's okay. You know, here's some things that work for me. They may or may not work for you, but I'm here. You can call day or night. I'm going to check in on you. I might bring you a coffee occasionally, whatever. Then you want to have, depending on what you're facing in that cocoon phase, it might be a therapist. It might be a life coach. It might be going to talk to your pastor. It might be a support group. There's so many things now online and in person. It's just finding what that part of the equation is And then another part of the equation of the tribe is going to be the friends you can have fun with. You don't have to talk about all the serious stuff that make you laugh, because grief work has anger in it. It involves laughter too, right? And then sometimes we're like, if I don't laugh, I'll cry. Like, okay, but the laughter is kind of offsetting. It's like the pressure cooker, right? We just have to unlock and let the steam out. That's what it's doing. It's not, you know, I'm avoiding or I'm escaping it. But no, it's actually let out the pressure. So you need those friends too. So create a tribe of people. And if you haven't found those people yet, that this is the beauty of our world today, where so much is online. There are so many groups and organizations and community centers and through churches and things. There's so much. But you have to go look on Meetup or Eventbrite or on Facebook or wherever and search for these things, rather than there isn't anything in my area. Have you ever looked? I get that a lot. There's nothing like this. I'm like, I know of five. And I'm not even a part of a group like that. So,
well, you're right. We do have to seek, right? We do have to seek. I mean, yeah. I have lots of local friends, you know, close friends, and then other groups. But then online, I have, you know, other groups of people, you know, that have become now where we do monthly, kind of like masterminds, but very just small groups, like just a couple people. But now, you know, and some of them I've never even met in person, but we're on Zoom constantly, you know, yeah. And it's like, we have really gotten to know each other. You know, we share things, what's going on in each other's lives. We share professional stuff, but like you said, you can meet different people. You know, that group was more because of what business things you're doing online, but we've now become closer than that. Right. And so to your point, there's so many groups, and I met them through a bigger group that I was in, you know, and then we started a small group from there. So it's possible. And like you said, you can find people that like just about everything, you know, even if it seems like the most niche thing, like you love shaping flowers or something. Like, there are people that like the thing you like, right? That you can find something in common with. So absolutely.
Totally.
Right.
Or learn a new hobby to be a part of the group.
Exactly.
But you just need to know that you are wanted, you are welcomed, mm-hmm. you are cheerleaded and affirmed. So if they're like super negative people, they're not your people during this time. And I would say in general, but like not during this time where you're healing, because again, the unlearning process is uncomfortable. Metamorphosis. Like, I always go back to the science of what metamorphosis really is. The caterpillar goes into a cocoon, it releases a hormone, and it digests itself. Okay, that sounds uncomfortable, right? Turning to mush sounds awful. But then as soon as it's fully done with that process, it releases an enzyme to start to form the butterfly. And how beautiful of that. No wonder the cocoon can't be opened sooner. Mush would just come out. Like, it would be like, you know, horrible soup. So we need that process, but that metamorphosis, if we hold that image of I am in a cocoon, it's uncomfortable. It has to be. So I need to have people surrounding me that affirm this cocoon and allow me to laugh when it hurts and help me to, you know, let out that anger in safe and healthy ways and just be my sounding board when I think I'm going crazy, right? Like, the amount of times I've had clients say to me, this is probably the worst thing you've ever heard. And I'm like, no. Or, I'm sure you think I'm crazy now. And I'm like, no. So the things that we tell ourselves, we need those people who go, no, actually, I've thought that too. I felt that too. You're okay. This is normal. Then you like, whoa, here I am, butterfly, ready to come out. And they're your cheerleading squad. And you know what? They might not stick around after that. That doesn't mean that they're the friends for only certain things. It's a season. Right. You might blossom to a level where you go, I'm ready for different friends. I'm in a different place. I don't need those things. So if you find that with your tribe that you're like, wow, now I don't really want to hang out with you guys or what, it's okay. That's part of it too. But you need that tribe through that season. And then I think lastly, is just getting really clear about what are the beliefs you have around the things that you have grief around, right? Like, I'm not worthy. If I fail, I'll be rejected. I'll be alone the rest of my life. Whatever those things are, write them down, because your logical brain will, one part of your brain will be like, that's not true. And the other part will be like, let me tell you 20 different ways it is. But if you just get it out on paper, you're releasing it from this, it's all in my mind. It's like cleaning our house, right? Like, oh my God, I don't even know where to start. I'm just going to watch Netflix. Like, no, let's just get out what needs to be cleaned in the kitchen, what needs to be cleaned in the bathroom. And you're like, okay, now I know what I want to work on now. I'm going to save that for therapy, and I'm going to save that for coaching, and that will be something like, you know, I used to love going to the batting cage in the States to let out anger, right? I'm going to go to the batting cage and face that thing I need to do. So once you have it all written down to the extent that you can, the layers of the onion, right? Then you know what you're facing. And for me, it brings the logic back into the emotional fear that we tend to feel.
Absolutely. So let me ask you about, you know, obviously your podcast is called The Balance Code. And what can you just tell us that you've learned, you know, both, you know, helping people through, you know, therapy and then now helping them also through grief and burnout. So what can you tell us about how can we find more balance in our lives and what does that really mean? I know it's probably different for different people.
Yes. So May 2023, I started the podcast. 2 weeks prior, I was running an online summit and was like, I'm going to just make a podcast because I'm already doing audios. Why not? Right. And of course, the first thought is like, what are you going to do it on? I work with couples. I work with expats. I am an expat. You know, like I have all these different things I can speak about, but I realize the common denominator that people always come back to me, and I think it's, you know, this as a mom of three, how do you do it all? And I was like, oh, I get that question a lot. Like, how do you do it all? You're doing this and this and this. And like, balance. But balance has a lot to do with burnout and grief and facing, you know, areas of emotional intelligence we haven't developed and facing our relationships and stuff. And I was like, wow, that's everything. Okay, balance. So it is the balance code. And the beauty of our balance code is that it's different for everyone. You know, I think at one of the episodes, I said, one of the key things that's all the same for all of us is a good night's rest, but journaling may not work for you. You know, going for runs may not physically be possible for you. So I can't go and tell you, here's the things you need to do for balance, but I can give you some guideposts of like something in this area would be good. What works for you? So for me, what's important in balance is us being very honest with ourselves. What's our why? Why are we adding that to our calendar? Why does that matter? And we have to get very, you know, strategic about this and very intentional because it's very easy again to fill up our calendar with all the things and stuff because I don't want to face it. But when we start to go, okay, I want balance in my week. Yeah. And it's like praying to be like a better parent or more patient. God isn't like, okay, magic wand, you know, fairy godmother. God's like, here's some situations to build that strength. Yeah. So I want more space in my calendar. Does not mean you're going to get, you know, not get 20 phone calls and 3 emails saying this has changed. That's this. Can you do it on this date? That is to go. Are you really ready for this? Let's do it. What does that balance look like? What does that space look like? What does self-care look like? And I often tell my clients, we get into this mindset of, well, what balance is self-care. So that means going and getting massage and getting my nails done. And I'm like, that's cool. What about balance with self-care is I plan the night before what needs to be already ready for the next day. I've already meal planned for the week ahead or even the month. Some people are super amazing at it, right? On the Sunday night.
Yeah.
Is that not self-care? Because then the rest of the week, you're not anxious and stressed and overwhelmed. They're like, oh, you're right. I, as a business owner, that I'm not waiting and doing my quarterlies the day of the quarterlies being done, but each month being the CFO of my business and actually uploading the stuff I need to and going ahead and having, making sure my tax advisor has everything. Or when it's time to do taxes, go, wow, I've already put everything together in one place and I don't have to hunt for everything. These things are self-care. That is actually caring for yourself. Yes, the massage is wonderful and it's on a physical nature, very needed, especially for the oxytocin release, especially if you're going through separation or divorce or really feel disconnected from physical touch. But it isn't all that self-care is.
Right.
And marketing would tell you, you know, I mean, marketing will make you feel like I have to buy this razor to shave my legs with because that's going to make my life a paradise. No, right. Like, no. But self-care can be these beautiful things that make us less stressed, feel better prepared and planned, and go, okay, procrastination. I often think that procrastination is just our desire to kind of go, you don't really matter. And I know it sounds weird to say your desire, but that's what it is, right? You don't really matter. Stress matters more. You being anxious matters more. You feeling a time crunch and screwing it up, in quotations, messing things up again, matters more because that's your truth. you're a procrastinator. You procrastinate on everything, right? So we get caught up in these identities and things, and then we don't take care of ourselves. And we go, well, I like to be under pressure. I don't think your nervous system does. Like, I don't think you do. And as we all know, as we get older, we don't like it. We really don't like it. So, you know, creating balance is, what does real self-care look like? What is my why? What am I praying for in my life? What are my goals that I'm setting? And am I willing to do the work to get to them? Or am I expecting the, you know, magic wand and it's there? Oh, I've got to do the work. Okay. Let me be really careful what I ask for. Let me be really mindful and know my why. And I think other pieces I've been hearing a lot from the people I'm interviewing, like yourself, you've been on it as well. We'll make sure that the link to the episode is in your show notes, but how the words we use to describe things shapes our mindset around our balance. I have to, again, I'm a procrastinator. How we identify ourselves, how we talk about the things we have to do. I have no time. There's never enough time. Time is going by so fast. Our brains are like the best personal assistants, but they miss some keywords. And so they just hear, time is moving fast. Okay, I'm going to see time moving fast. I don't have enough time, so we're going to make sure there's not enough time. Not, I want more time. I am creating more time. Oh, brain's like creating more time. Let's create more time. Nope, I don't need to do this. Let me cancel this and not feel bad about it, right? So you got to train that personal assistant to know what it's actually looking for and not, you know, not the negatives of like, there's not enough time. Not enough time. Got it. I can do that. I can give you that, right? I can give you that mindset. So our words are so powerful.
And I think what can happen, and it's easy to happen, you know, especially if you do have, you know, as you're raising your kids, if you have kids, or maybe you have a job that does really require way over 40 hours a week, right? Like if you're an early lawyer, that's, or a doctor, those are kind of expected. There's a season where you will work more than that kind of hour for, in most cases. So, you know, yeah, there's exceptions to the rule, but I think in general, it's, we can let our calendars control us instead of us realizing we truly have power over them. Because if you're clear on all your whys, not just one, like, you know, I want to, you know, like, this is what I want, what's important, what, if you, not only your why, if you know what your why is, but also what's important to you, then you use that to audit or assess everything about your calendar. So if you're like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough time at home to kind of prepare for the next day because I'm running my kids to a different event every night. Well, there's a lot of solutions to that, right? We can carpool with somebody else. I mean, there's all these other options, but I see so many parents, they don't do that because maybe they didn't feel like they knew somebody well enough or there wasn't somebody close by. But there are ways for us to figure some of these things out, but it takes a little more work and us getting a little more uncomfortable to figure that out, right? To have the conversations or ask other people. And I'm not just saying like, go send your kids off with somebody you don't know and don't trust, of course, but do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Sometimes I think we just think I have to be here for every second. I can't just miss even sitting in a parking lot for 2 hours while my kids are at practice. And we fill our schedules when really maybe there could have been a different solution. Like I drop off and somebody picks up. And now if your kid's four, that's a different thing. I understand. Like as they get older though, right, they're, yep, they can be more independent and they don't need to be supervised the whole practice. But I think I see that so many times where people, they get in these patterns when our kids are little. And as they get older, they still do it. You know, they still, I mean, I'm very involved, but it's like, I also have a lot of boundaries around those things.
Yeah. The two mindsets are either it's all on me or I have to do everything. And if you find yourself saying that to yourself, even if it's out of anger, like, God, it's always me. I always have to do everything. Personal assistant's like, okay,
yep.
Then we won't think creatively of ways that you can get help because it's just you. Got it. Yeah. So that's exactly it. Think creatively. Your kid's been on the soccer team for 2 months or 3 months. This is the time to go, who else needs like help with this? Like I'll pick up on Mondays. You got Fridays. Perfect. Okay. We rotate it. One of the things I've loved about being here in Germany is we, in our neighborhood, we're near the school, we're near ballet, like walkable.
Yeah,
and nice. It's such a safe place. The kids walk to school by themselves because everybody's walking at the same time. And there's occasionally some parents, but everybody knows like that's what kids go. Everybody's going. So there's a lot of flexibility. But as an American mom, I was like, no, what are you talking about? And I was almost going to be that crazy mom who drove the 6 minutes down the road rather than let them walk the 10 minutes, yeah. You know, to be like, I've got you here and I know you got here. And it was like, okay, breathe. Like everything's okay. And when there's sport things and stuff, the moms around here are like immediate WhatsApp group. Who's doing pickup? Who's doing this? You know, and coordinating. And I'm like, thank you. Exactly. Sometimes you do feel like it's all on you, even if it's not really. Right. And then all of a sudden you have these glimpses of like, I'm here to help. You got to take them up on it.
And I don't know if you have anything to say about this, and this is very specific, I guess, but you know, and there's no right answer here. I'm not saying there is, but you know, I know a lot of women that cook, but I also know a lot of women that don't cook, right? There's a lot more women that don't cook nowadays. And I'm not making any statement about that. But I will say the women that I know that cook, many of them feel like even if they have full-time careers, all the things, so they're doing multitude of things, they still feel like, well, I have to get my family dinner. And I'm like, they can't eat leftovers this one night, or you can't get take. But it's the way that they go about it. And I just think for me, I'm like, I make dinner a lot, but if there's nights where I'm like, you're going to just eat leftovers, I have something going on, or you'll figure out, my kids aren't, you know, they're not little anymore. So, but I still have friends. It's like, they so feel like in their identity, they have to do this thing, and they feel guilty if they don't, even if they miss a night. So, you know, and I want to be like, it's okay, but they don't feel that way about it. And so I think, is that just a, you know, I mean, I sort of get the pattern there, but I'm saying, what would you just say to people that maybe just feel like they can't let go of that control, right? Of that need to do, you know, to be the mom or to be the person that's serving their family.
Yeah, it's those roots, right? Again, like, where are those roots coming from? Like, is this what your mom did or mom didn't do? And you're like, I will provide, right? Or your dad and you didn't like it, whatever it might be. So when we get really raw and real with ourselves and start to go, like, I will feel guilty if I don't do this. No one's going to make me feel guilty. I will feel guilty.
Yeah.
What is the why? Why of the guilty? Where does that come from? Well, this is how I should be. A good mom does this. Do I know good moms who don't? I actually do know good moms who don't make the meals. And one of the coolest things about living here is like lunch is their hot meal and dinner is like bread and salami and cheese. And I was like, yes. I remember meeting a mom who's like, I never make a hot meal at dinner time. And I'm like, sign me up. Where is this? And I'm like, I have a choice. What?
That's right. Right. Yeah. We're not supposed to even eat our heaviest meal at dinner. Right. So it makes sense. Yes. Actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like what you said about that. And I think it's true. And I think that's a good thing is, you know, we just have to reflect on why would I feel bad? Like, why would this make me feel bad if I didn't do this thing every time? You know, like 85% is pretty good, right? Or whatever. Like, so I like that we should just kind of reflect and assess and ask ourselves, like, why would this make me feel guilty? Or why would this make me feel shame or any other emotion that might come up for us?
Right. And then counteract it with, how can I prove to myself that that actually isn't true?
Yeah.
And then the more you do that, you start to rewrite those beliefs and go like, oh, I can make dinner 80% of the time. And the other 20%, I'm still loved and accepted and told I'm a good mom. Okay. Can I go down to 70%? Can I
move this up? Right. And kind of what else you have going on. Absolutely. So Katie, what else would you just want to share with us, you know, with the audience, just to, you know, around everything that you share in your books and your podcast, just to leave the listeners with?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I want to remind people of is that we often just feel like this is how life is. This is who I am. I'm stuck. And one of the most beautiful things is you can regularly reinvent yourself. And I don't mean like go buy the red sports car and do that type of stuff. I don't mean a crisis. I mean a metamorphosis and being able to transition and grow. And the more that you get on board with like change is normal in life, and how do I feel more comfortable with that, get the support I need, that tribe, all the things that we have, your resiliency starts to blossom again and you feel capable and strong and empowered rather than a victim to life and I'm being punished and oh, why me? And you start to go, oh, I actually am kind of in a sense like a co-creator of how things are going because it's how I speak about things and what I write down and what my why is and my purpose. So if you're in that place where you're just like, yeah, I just feel really stuck. I don't have the answers. I don't know the why, but I just feel stuck. Cocoon. Allow yourself to cocoon to figure those things out. And it's such a beautiful process in the end. And I have a chapter of my book that's a free audio. I'll make sure that your guests have or your community has, because it helps you to outline what causes hidden grief and how is it showing up. Because there's even more than what I shared. I mean, you can have a health condition. I have a friend who has type 1 diabetes, and she and I, when I wrote the book, she read it and she's like, type 1 diabetes. My whole life, I have grieved that I don't have the life like all the rest of you. I am constantly having to check, constantly having to be aware of what I eat. I'm constantly feeling the highs and lows of, you know, the blood sugar and the hormones and everything. I was like, oh my God, I never thought about that. I never thought about that. So yeah, I encourage you to listen to it and just kind of see what sits for you, because as you cocoon, that's the stuff you're writing down. I've got grief around this. I've got grief around that. Wow. I have a wonderful client I'm working with right now. And part of her work is recognizing that her parents' problems from her childhood are now playing out of things she needs to heal now, right? One of them has already passed away for years now. And she's blaming the other parent, who I would, you know, logically we'd all be like, isn't it the parent who did something bad that you would blame? But she doesn't. She blames the other as she's working on her own stuff. And it's like right there, that is the beauty of this work, because it's whatever that bond is between that parent that you're struggling with, that's what can be healed right now, whether they're alive or not. That cocoon phase she's in is what's going to help transform her and break the belief systems and cut ties with things that aren't hers to hold on to anymore, right? That are no longer generational weights on her shoulders, because she's choosing to take them off. So then her boys don't have those problems too. And that is powerful work. It inspires me, but it is the strength and resilience that's built within you as you do that is the piece that just remember you have that. So listen to the chapter, start writing down the stuff that's coming up that you're like, yep, I got this. And then you see like that house that needs to be cleaned. Okay, this is the first thing I'm going to work on. I don't have to work on everything today, but this is the first thing. And that's your first step.
And you're so right. I mean, when you were talking about your friend with type 1, I have several siblings with type 1, and I know it causes, like you said, it is grief in some way, like any chronic illness. And I just did an interview just yesterday, actually, with a woman who's same thing. She's lived with type 1 diabetes her whole life, or most of her life, and she's had cancer 3 times. She's going through it the 3rd time right now, and a lot more to her story. But the point was, she is a survivor. Like she has found a place to belong where for most of her life, she didn't feel that. And then it led to some really, you know, not great things. But the point is she's overcome it all, but it's all because she was willing to do the things you're talking about, right? She was willing to sit in that time and then get the help she needed. She was willing to find a place to belong and understand her why, and then, you know, learn new things. And so it's so important that we deal with our grief and we deal with what's going on. We figure out some purpose, place to belong, you know, and like what's going to excite us for the future, and know that there's the future can be brighter than anything in our past, right? But we have to be willing to step into it. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you so much, Kitty, for joining us today. Can you share with everybody how they can learn more about your books and the podcast and just connecting with you and your how you work with people?
Yeah. So if you're interested in either of the books, The New Face of Grief is on Amazon, and then all like Target, anywhere online. The second book is Giving Birth to Motherhood. So if you had a challenging or traumatic birth, it's how to write your birth story in a way that helps heal. My co-author is the type 1 diabetes friend, and she teaches you how to write the story really as an author. And I teach you how to do it in a therapeutic way that helps heal. And it's half journal, half book. It's really powerful for women who've been doing it. So both of those are online on all bookstores. My podcast is The Balance Code. You can find it. It's also as a YouTube channel. So if you want to watch the episodes, you can, or just listen on your favorite podcast platform. And you can find me at Katie Russler, and it's R-O without the dots over it, SSLER.com. I'm on Instagram as that as well, or Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find me anywhere.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing about grief and how we can work on it, step through it, and find more joy in our lives.
Thank you, Kristen.
Okay, as I wrap up today's episode, I just want to share with you a couple things that Katie shared with us during this interview. So here they go. These are things that you're going to want to remember. They're questions you can ask yourself, and they're just really a guidepost or reflection points that you can ask yourself. So the first is, she says, we need reevaluation and shifts. What's my why? What do I actually want to do? And what matters to me? And I talk about these things often, but these are things that we regularly need to be checking in with ourselves on. We need to write about it. We need to check our priorities and values against what we have going on in our schedules in our lives. So that's the first thing I wanted to share. The next is, she says, the epidemic of burnout is because people aren't resolving the hidden grief in their lives. And I think she shared so many valuable lessons, so many valuable tidbits that we can all use in our own lives. And then she shared her own stories of what she's walked through. And I think it can help us reflect on what might be hidden under there that we need to allow ourselves that space to cocoon our, that space to have a metamorphosis. All right. The next thing is, she said, one of the most natural and normal parts of life is change. And because of that, there will always be grief. And there will always be a letting go of what we thought life would or should look like. And I think that's so true. Most of us have at least once, maybe multiple times, or maybe many times had that feeling where we thought life would or should or could have looked different. And it's something that we have to process, right? It is a type of grief. And so it's important to remember that. The next thing is, she says, grief isn't just sadness, but it is always letting go of the way we thought life would or should go. Similar to the last one, but I just wanted to reiterate, grief isn't just sadness. It is so many other things. And she did such a great job of sharing so many of those things. It's when we have a shift, when we have a letting go of something, it's when we have a, maybe we are losing an identity, or we are, a relationship is changing. Maybe we're moving, right? Maybe we're, so it's so many things, and it can be something that's changing. It can be something that's, you know, pulled out from underneath us. I mean, there's so much to it. So it's just something to be aware of. And then I loved what she talked about with procrastination. She said basically that procrastination is our desire to go, you don't something. In other words, if we're procrastinating, which let's be honest, most of us probably have or do procrastinate on some things, it's usually the things we don't want to do or that seem hard. And she talks about that really what we're doing is we are picking whatever the thing is that we're not doing over ourselves. She says, procrastination over our desire to go, you don't really matter, but the stress matters more. Being anxious matters more. And she goes on with these examples, but we get caught up in the identities and the stories of that, you know, we have to hold on to the stress. I'm a stressful person. I'm a busy person. I'm always late. I'm always the one that doesn't get it done on time, right? We keep telling ourselves these same words in these same stories. And we have to be careful, as we talked about in this episode, about what we say to ourselves, you know, what we write about ourselves. And we need to change the identity in the story. We need to change it to flip that script. And so that's another thing I wanted to share with you. So these are just a couple of the things that I wanted to recap from today's episode, but I hope you got so much out of today's episode. And I hope that you see that grief is so much more than when we have the loss of a loved one or a pet or something like that, that grief is in the ebb and flow of life. And it's the ups and downs. It's the change and transitions. And so when we look at it from that perspective, we realize that it is part of life. It is expected. And while it might not feel normal when we're going through it, it is part of that metamorphosis. And on the other side of going through and allowing ourselves to have these feelings, we will continue to find joy in the hope for our futures. So until next time, I hope you have a great week, and definitely check out all of the resources that are added in the show notes to you. So that you can go and grab some of those, you know, the free chapter she talked about, and I linked to her books and other resources as well. So go check that out.
Thanks again for listening to the show. And if you enjoyed today's episode, we would love it if you could take a minute to leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, because it helps our show get discovered by more people. And if you'd like to be encouraged in your faith and in your life, go on to kristenfitch.com and sign up to get my newsletter. I have lots of freebies and lots of inspiration and encouragement that'll be coming your way. And I would love it if you joined part of our community.